Hands up out there. Who remembers what America was like in the spring of 1974? I sure do. I was in college then. 39 years ago, America was winding down its involvement in the Vietnam War. The so-called generation gap was huge. It was testy. And the Watergate scandal was boiling away on the front burner, eventually bringing down President Richard Nixon in August of 1974. The spring of 1974 saw a social trend that spread across college campuses: streaking. Just what was behind that phenomenon of stripping off one's clothes and dashing about the campuses of America, with the University of Michigan in the forefront of this craze? Taking us back in time now are Bill Kirkpatrick. He's a professor of media studies at Denison University in Ohio, and he authored the article, "It Beats Rocks and Tear Gas, Streaking and Cultural Politics in the Post-Vietnam Era." Welcome, Bill.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also joining me in the studio, we have writer and historian Jim Tobin. Welcome to Stateside, Jim.
Thanks for having me, too.
So those who were around for that spell of streaking that erupted in early 74 remember it well. But for those who weren't, Bill, give us a streaking history lesson. When did it all start and how?
Well, the earliest reports of streaking, I mean, it goes back, obviously, to Lady Godiva. You can go way back in history and find people who were protesting naked. There were reports in the Civil War and even in the Revolutionary War of people who were streaking, not necessarily for political ends, but certainly to be rude and to have fun, probably drink involved and that sort of thing.
I would imagine.
I would imagine so. Streaking is a campus phenomenon. There were reports at Stanford in 1918. But what's interesting about 1974 is that the term streaking, nobody really knew what it meant. The earliest news reports kind of had to define it for people. And so even in 1974, it was not widespread. It wasn't known. It wasn't a thing that people sort of expected or knew what that was the way it is today. So it was those earliest streaks. I believe Florida had some of the earliest ones, maybe weather-related, who knows. But so early 1974, the phenomenon was not in wide circulation. The term was not in wide circulation.
But by the first week of March, it seemed to be kind of everywhere, didn't it?
That's correct, yeah. The first few campuses, Florida and so forth, began streaking, and it sort of passed from campus to campus in February. And then in early March, the national news networks began to catch on. So all three nightly news networks began to run stories about streaking. It began to catch the attention of the New York Times and other major outlets. And then, of course, from there, then it really began to skyrocket. And throughout March, you had probably thousands and thousands of events.
And Jim Tobin, streaking came to the University of Michigan that March. Tell us how it began. Who participated?
Well, the funny thing is that wildfire effect that happened in the first week of March was the week that Michigan students were on their spring break. So nobody was in Ann Arbor. But, of course, everybody, all the students were hearing about this, seeing it on TV, and dying to get back to Ann Arbor, apparently, to take part. So the Tuesday, actually the Monday after spring break, there were announcements that there would be a couple of events taking place. But because streaking had been more or less a solo phenomenon, mm-hmm. Michigan students wanted to do something different. And so they introduced the idea of mass streaks, streak-ins. So the sort of groups were recruited to take part. So the groups didn't get very large, but the next day, Tuesday, after announcements in the Michigan Daily, the student paper, groups gathered, one at lunchtime and then one in the evening. And the one in the evening, perhaps because of the cover of darkness, was a lot bigger. but still, that was only about 70 students. The real crowd were the thousands of students who turned out to watch the 70 who were streaking.
And cheer them on, I'm sure.
Right. It's a true media event because the earlier streaks, as Bill could explain, were spontaneous. I mean, there were surprises, and this was planned. So it was obviously planned with the purpose of getting people to watch.
And so the first mass streak came from Ann Arbor. And then really by that spring, it really had become a pop culture sensation. Both of you, do you remember this song from Ray Stevens that turned into a huge hit?
Well, yes, they call him the street. Look at that. Fastest thing on 2 feet. Look at that.
And the fact that a goofball song like that became a huge radio hit, well, what does that tell us about what the public thought of streaking, Bill?
Well, I remember hearing that song. I was 7 years old at the time. So, and we were singing it around the house, and we thought it was the funniest thing in the world.
Ethel, put your clothes on.
Yes, Ethel. Of course.
Yeah.
Forgot that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think it goes to almost from the instant that it really caught fire, there were efforts to trivialize it, right? There were efforts to see it as just a college fad, to see it as something that was funny, goofy, harmless, and so forth. And you know, I would certainly agree that it was. But what's interesting is by the time that that song had become a hit, it was already sort of solidified as this kind of harmless fad that was goofy and silly and wacky and whatnot. But there was this earlier prehistory of that song where in the early days, in February and March, there was still quite a lot of contest about whether this is something that we need to be worried about, whether this is something that we need to take seriously. So that song certainly sealed in the popular imagination that this is a harmless fad, and it sort of has gone down in history with the pet rocks and the hula hoops and the whatnots, right? But that it wasn't always the case, and that song came out much after some of these little battles had happened.
We're talking with Bill Kirkpatrick, who's a professor of media studies at Denison University, and with writer and historian James Tobin, and we're talking about the phenomenon from the early months of 1974 of streaking that largely happened on college campuses. But I do remember that a streaker dashed across the stage at the Oscar Awards in April 1974, and I remember David Niven was co-hosting, and he got off that great line, and here's his line: "Isn't it fascinating to think that probably the only laugh that man will ever get in his life is by stripping off and showing his shortcomings," which was a good one. But streaking largely was happening on college campuses. Bill, why was that? What social and historical forces were fueling this?
I think one of the main things to keep in mind is that the college campus had become a fairly contested place. University of Michigan, University of Wisconsin, the big state campuses, but also a lot of the schools around the country, where there had been many, many years of campus protests, campus unrest, campus violence.
Sit-ins.
Yes, sit-ins, bombings. And so you were coming out of this history of the late 60s and early 70s in which the campus had been sort of radically politicized. And the college student in the American cultural imagination had been seen as something of a problem for American identity. And with Watergate brewing and the Vietnam War having been lost and so forth, there was this kind of discussion about the loss of innocence. America had been suffering a loss of innocence. And a lot of that was blamed on the college campuses where so much of this protest and unrest had taken place. So in the late 1973, early 1974, you're seeing a lot of people who are sort of actively clamoring for a return to the half-forgotten joys of the 1950s,
okay,
and golden optimism.
The I Like Ike era?
Yes, exactly. Of course, then there's a second trend that was happening at the same time, which is right as Americans were hoping to reclaim the campus from the leftists and the liberals, right?
Mm-hmm.
The campus itself was becoming politicized in new and different ways with the rise of women's studies programs and African American studies programs. There had been some well-publicized battles over female professors not getting tenure, and so at the same time that the left was being pushed out, there was this new move to politicize the campus in a different way and on behalf of underrepresented groups, and especially women and people of color.
Do either of you have any thoughts on why it was that virtually 100% of these streakers, at least in the early days, were white males? Jim, do you have any thoughts on that?
Most students on American college campuses in 1974 were white students, and not many women were inclined to take their clothes off. I think that's the major reason.
Well, I think one of the things that's obvious about streaking is that it foregrounds both the race and the gender of the person who's doing it. And so the fact that it was predominantly white men, and in fact, black students often distanced themselves from it, right? That there was
crazy white people.
Right, yeah. And there were efforts to politicize streaking early on, again, in that sort of March of 74 moment, where different campus activists sought to streak for black rights, to streak on behalf of these female professors who weren't getting tenure and so forth. And all of those efforts to politicize streaking failed because of this kind of insistence by the white male students that, no, this is just an old-fashioned college prank. This is just a good old-fashioned return to the, right? and return to normalcy, right?
Yeah.
And of course, there's nothing more abnormal than taking off your clothes and running in public. So it's this kind of act of social imagination to take this very abnormal activity and try to construct and present it as a return to a normalcy that, of course, never exists.
Right, but I would say that those who tried to claim a radical meaning for it were similarly trying to construct it, similarly trying to define it to use it for their own political purposes. I think both right and left were engaged in the same activity there, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And what's interesting about that is that the right basically won.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I found these great quotes from George Will and from the National Review and so forth, who were actually, I have a great quote from George Will who said, you know, who knows, maybe these bumptious, cheerful streakers will bring us together by bridging the generation gap. They could swallow fistfuls of goldfish and then streak into telephone booths. This is just what America needs to become a land fit for heroes, nostalgia buffs and the buff. So the conservatives glommed onto this as a kind of return to the innocence of the 1950s.
And, you know, that bring us together line is one of Nixon's campaign slogans in
1968. Yeah.
George Will. Hmm. You know, it is interesting that streaking in the 70s, Jim Tobin, it was the predecessor of the Ann Arbor Naked Mile, which really went on until not too long ago.
Right. I don't know whether there is an exact connection between those two things, because the Naked Mile ritual didn't start until a number of years later, sometime in the 80s, I think, late 80s. So this was students who didn't, you know, hadn't taken part in streaking in 1974.
Maybe older brothers might have.
Maybe so. And many more women took part in the Naked Mile over the years. So it had become, it had become a sexually liberated event as opposed to streaking.
Now, I'm kind of wondering, do either of you see anything happening on campuses today that at all resembles or has the power of what that streaking meant in 74? Because somehow, I don't know, posting YouTube videos of your baseball team lip syncing to Call Me Maybe doesn't quite pack that same punch, at least in my view. What do you think?
I mean, there are a lot of campuses that still have Naked Week or the Naked Mile, the Streak In, that kind of thing. And the meaning of it has definitely changed. I think that whatever kind of importance it had at the moment of 1974, at that particular juncture in American history, that's changed, right? So now there is a kind of nostalgic element to it, and as Jim said, a kind of sexual liberational element to it. So the campus itself is becoming a kind of carnivalesque space in American identity, right? This is a place where students are encouraged to be more liberated or even libertine, right? And Naked Week kind of fits into that. But, of course, all of these events are sanctioned by the administration, right? So it gives the college students a chance to feel liberated, even though, okay, for this one week during Naked Week here, you know, at Denison we have a Naked Week, right? For this one week, you're allowed to do this, but not the rest of the time and not off campus. And right, so it's a very controlled, very administration-dominated kind of libertarianism.
That makes me think of an interesting trend that occurred much, much earlier, and I think this mimics that, which is that the early Greek societies, the early men's fraternities, were kind of outlaw societies in the 19th century. Then the university, the administration, gradually incorporated them into sort of the structure of regulated student life.
Kind of co-opted them.
Co-opted them, tamed them, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so what Bill is talking about, I think, reflects this long, long traditional antagonism between students and administrators, students and faculty. And in the long run, the faculty, the grown-ups seem to win. But there are these great outbursts of student outrageousness that get out of hand for a while and then come under the lash.
This was absolutely a fascinating trip back in time to 1974. We've been talking to writer-historian Jim Tobin and Bill Kirkpatrick, professor of media studies at Denison University. Thanks to both of you. And if we hear of any reports of streaking, we're going to know who to blame.
Thank you. It was fun.
It was fun.